Okay, well, for those who have not been part of the class or maybe have missed a couple of weeks, we are looking at the God's plan for the family. Specifically, we're talking about the roles and responsibilities of each person within the family. And we really began by looking at Psalm 127 and 1. And there in Psalm 127, if you remember, we're told, "Unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain who build it. Unless the Lord guards the city, the watchman stays awake in vain." And so the idea here, of course, is that we want God to be the builder of our house, the builder of our family. And so we spent the last 2 weeks, the last 3 weeks, looking at husbands and wives and the obligation that each of those have. That husbands are obligated to love their wives and obligated to lead. And we looked at the wives. We looked at how they were to be submissive and what that meant. And then we also looked at the issue of homemakers. Now we're going to move on to those who are not married. And what does the Bible teach about those individuals who are not married? And I think it's important that we bring out a couple of things about this before we get too far into talking about the obligations and responsibilities of the unmarried. Marriage is something that we know is limited to this world. And we know that because, if you remember, the Sadducees brought a question to Jesus. They asked Jesus about a man who had a wife and they never had children and he died. And then so the wife married the man's brother and kind of the story goes on. And the question was, well, in the resurrection, whose wife would this woman be? And of course, the Sadducees were trying to set Jesus up to trick him. But Jesus says this in Mark chapter 12, verse 25. For when they raise from the dead, they neither marry nor are given to marriage, but are like angels in heaven. And so the point here that we can get in context to our topic is that marriage is something that's limited to this world. Once we move into the spiritual world, once we pass on and get our reward, there is no such thing as marriage. So even though Emily and I are married here in this life, when we die, that marriage no longer exists. And so there's lots of reasons for marriage. But while it's not the only reason for marriage, in talking about the unmarried, Paul addresses it through the topic of intimacy. Now, I think it's interesting that this is how he approaches this topic, because some of the other reasons for marriage can be accomplished outside of marriage. You know, you remember we talked about this a lot. In the beginning, God saw a man, and what did he say? He says, not good for man to be alone, and so he made a companion. And so those people who are unmarried certainly can find companionship, not exactly the same kind of companionship, but they can find companionship outside of marriage. But in talking about sex, it is limited to marriage. Intimacy is something that God tells us is only found inside the marriage bond. And so in speaking about the unmarried, Paul addresses the subject through intimacy. So let's go to 1 Corinthians chapter 7. We're going to spend a lot of time here in this chapter, and we're going to look at some other passages too. We spent a lot of time in this chapter the last couple of weeks too, because here in 1 Corinthians 7, it addresses these relationships. It addresses husbands and wives, but it also addresses the unmarried. So let's look at just the first two verses there. "Now concerning the things of which you wrote to me, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. Nevertheless, because of sexual immorality, let each man have his own wife, and let each woman have her own husband." And so here, apparently the people at Corinth wrote Paul a letter, had some questions for him, and apparently the questions were something about marriage. And so Paul here begins by saying, he begins this topic in talking about intimacy. He says that he first begins by saying, it's good that a man not touch a woman. Nevertheless, because of sexual immorality, because there are these sexual desires, let each person get married. That's Paul's conclusion here. And so, this chapter talks a little bit about the obligations in husbands and wives to each other as it relates to intimacy. And then, in verse 7, we pick up with some of the commands for the unmarried. So, if someone would, let's read verses 7 through 9. 1 Corinthians 7, verses 7 through 9.
For I wish that all men were even as I myself, that each one has his own gift from God, one in this manner and another in that. But I say to the unmarried and to the widows, it is good for them if they remain even as I am. But if they cannot exercise self-control, let them marry. For it's better to marry than to burn with passion.
All right, so here in verse 7, when Paul says, I wish that all men were even as myself, what does he mean there?
He was celibate. He didn't have a wife.
All right, Paul was single. And so Paul here says that I wish that people were single. But what was the reason why Paul says that some should get married?
Because they may burn with passion.
That's right. God has built within us desires. And Paul recognizes those desires. And apparently, Paul either didn't have those desires or he knew how to control them. And so because of that, he knows that other people aren't going to be in the same situation as him. And so as a result, he says, those people, it's better to marry than to burn. And burn, I think we could really take a couple of connotations here. Burn, like burn with desire. Or I think we might even go so far to say, it says it burn with passion. That's the connotation. But, in the end, a single person who chooses not to be married, yet doesn't control those desires, might find themselves in eternal torment in the end. But here, Paul says in verse 8, to the unmarried and to the widows, it's good for them to remain even as I am. So here we've got the two groups of people that we'll talk about this morning. What does God command for the widows and for the unmarried? Those people who don't have a spouse. And I think God looks at both of these together, and we will look at them together, although oftentimes they're on different age spectrums, right? You've got the unmarried who, and oftentimes we think of as young, but it isn't always that way. And then widows who we oftentimes think of older, but it also isn't necessarily that way. So Paul begins this conversation in talking about that it's better, but if you can't control your desires, then be married, because it's better to be married than to burn with passion. All right, let's go down to verse 32. So here is where Paul starts to make commandments, or where we see God making commandments to the people who are unmarried. So what does God expect of the unmarried? Someone read verse 32 through 35.
But I want you to be without care. He who is unmarried cares for the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But he who is married cares about the things of the world, how he may please his wife. There is a difference between a wife and a virgin. The unmarried woman cares about the things of the Lord, that she may be holy, both in body and in spirit. But she who is married cares about the things of the world, how she may please her husband. And this I say for your own profit, not that I may put a leash on you, but for what is proper, that you may serve the Lord without distraction.
Alright, so here we have the clearest commands to those people who are unmarried that we'll find in the Bible. So the first thing, what do we see? Let's start with this. Let me back up a little bit. There in verse 34, there's a difference between a wife and a virgin. A couple of times, we're going to hear in the scriptures this term virgin used to describe people who are unmarried. And I think this is very interesting. Because one thing that we won't talk about is someone who is unmarried. One of the commands that we could look at for the unmarried is that you are to be celibate. You are to abstain from sexual relations. And that's why we see in this situation that the Bible uses this term virgin to describe the unmarried. And so in talking about the unmarried, what's the first, well, really, what's the only command that's given here? What does God expect of the people who are unmarried?
Assumption here that they will care for the Lord.
Okay.
And the things of the Lord. It doesn't mean that all that are unmarried or even wives care for the Lord. But he's assuming that this is people who will care for the Lord.
Yeah, so it is a comparison and contrast, isn't it? Right? If you're married, here we're told that you're distracted. And I don't know, we sometimes think of distraction as a negative thing, but that really is true, isn't it? When you're married, you have other responsibilities too, don't you? You're responsible not just to serve God, but you're also responsible to your spouse. And that's the message here. If you're a husband, well, you not only care about the things of God, but you also care about the things of the world, meaning you care about taking care of your wife. If you're a wife, you should care about the Lord, but you also are distracted in that you care about your husband. And ultimately, we may see that children will play in time. But that's not the case for the unmarried, right? They can serve the Lord without distraction. And so when I see this, I see that the obligation of the unmarried is to serve the Lord. That's the expectation. And it appears as though the expectation of the unmarried in serving the Lord is slightly higher than that of the person who's married. Now, how we put that into practice, we can talk about. But the idea here is that if you're unmarried, you don't have the distractions of a married life, and therefore you can devote more time to serving God. Dwayne, you had a comment.
His mindset, and so it's threaded all through all of this.
Yeah.
Does it mean that less than maximum production is wrong or anything? No. Because those who are married may put in almost maximum production, maybe. But they do have other responsibilities that God has given them, so they can't quite put in as much.
It's interesting. God here... You know, you would expect, we might expect God to say, well, no matter what situation you find yourself in, serve me entirely. But we kind of see that, but it appears though here we're seeing a little bit of leniency, knowing that if you have a wife, if you have a husband, that there are responsibilities that I expect you to take as a result of that role, and therefore I understand that that's going to mean that you're not going to be able to serve me without distraction. There's other things in your life now that you need to be concerned about. I think that word distraction is just such a good word because it describes really the situation here.
But we also need to remember God established the family just like He established the church, and when a man and a woman is righteous in raising their children and righteous in their marriage, they're serving God by doing that. So that's one way. You know, I believe that God should get our maximum effort, no matter married or unmarried. It just depends on, you know, you just give your maximum effort in whatever you do. And I don't think we're talking about time here, you know. If a person's unmarried, they have more time to serve God. So therefore, we should expect more fruit from people who are unmarried that are Christian, not less fruit.
That might be the best way to look at this. It isn't about the effort that you put in. It may be about the time that you put in.
And putting time into your family, teaching them the things of God, is doing God's will. That's maximum effort, I think
the important point... It's not the same. The expectations that God has for married people in their service to Him is different than the expectations that God has of single people. Dad, do you have a comment?
Yeah, I was expectation of those who are unmarried. And I think that for those in verse 33 who are married, they naturally look outside of themselves to care for the others. But those who are unmarried, they can be caught up in the fact of looking at themselves only. And we've known people that we refer to as the old bachelor, or the only person he's thinking about is himself. And so when you're unmarried, you have to, there's an effort there. There's an opportunity, but there's also a challenge that you're going to have to look beyond yourself. And that's, and it, to me, is that that's a, its own challenge.
That's a good point. Yeah. Hold on, Bob. Tad, you had a comment?
Bob can go first.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, Bob.
I was thinking a parallel passage that might kind of go with this thought is that when the young married Israelite, didn't have to go to war. I remember you reading.
Yeah.
Didn't have to go to war
for a year.
For a year.
Yeah.
So I think that same idea, he didn't have to serve in the same capacity as one that wasn't there.
Yeah. Yeah.
You still had to be an Israelite.
Yeah. Well, that's right. You still had to be an Israelite.
The law still applies.
Yeah. There's different expectations. That's really the bottom line. What the Lord expects of you as an Israelite who's just been married is different because what are you supposed to do in that year? You're supposed to learn how to please your wife. That was the point of taking the year where you didn't go to war and didn't start a business, because then you spent that year learning how to please your wife. And why is that? Because we talked about it takes effort. And it's a distraction from the other things. Imagine here you take a wife and then you go off to war. Well, you know, you never really took the time to try to make that relationship work. Tad, did you forget what you were going to say?
I think
yeah, okay. Let's keep this idea of doing work, and let's go to 1 Timothy chapter 5. I think this ties in great with the next group of people we'll talk about, and that's the widows. So the widows are in some ways in the same boat as a person who never got married, right? They are no longer married. And I think we can make this widows or widowers, although the passage here is directed towards wives who have lost their husbands. And there's lots of passages we could look at, or lots of the verses we could look at here, but I want to focus on a couple of them. Let's first start with verses 5 and 6. So someone read 5 and 6.
Now she who is really a widow and left alone trusts in God and continues in supplications and prayers night and day. But she who lives in pleasure is dead while she lives.
Interesting, right? So in 1 Corinthians, Paul tells the unmarried that your expectation is to serve the Lord without distraction. And then here, we find this idea of she who is really a widow, left alone. You don't have anyone. In some ways, you're the same as what you were before you were married. You don't have any obligations. That you trust in God. This appears to be the same, saying the same thing. Here's the same expectations. Trust in God, continue in supplications and prayer night and day. And then what's that contrasted to? A person who lives in pleasure. I think this may speak back to maybe something that Dad was saying about this idea of being selfish. Now I don't have a husband, or now I don't have a wife, and so now I can do all of the things that I wanted to do. And now I don't have to serve the Lord the way that I did before. They're living in pleasure. She's dead while she lives. Now let's skip down to verse 11 through 13. Someone read 1 Timothy 5, 11 through 13.
But refuse the younger widows, for when they have begun to grow wanton and against Christ, they desire to marry, having condemnation because they have cast off their first faith. And besides, they learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house, and not only idle, but also gossips and busybodies, saying things which they ought not.
All right, so there's two things I want to bring out here. One is about work, right? The last verse 13 addresses this issue that, okay, this is a widow, a younger widow who no longer has a husband. And now look what happens to them. They've become idle. They're not working. And in fact, they're creating trouble. And why is it that they're not working? Well, that's the second point, and that's actually the first point that Paul makes, that they have grown wanton against Christ. What does that mean? What does that mean, they've grown wanton against Christ?
Well, for one thing, there are youngers, or these are younger.
Yeah, these are younger widows.
They start thinking about a relationship and having more children or all of these things. It doesn't necessarily, that word wanton doesn't necessarily indicate they're wanton toward real grievous sin necessarily, but it leads that way.
Right. It's the same thing that Paul talked about in 1 Corinthians 7, isn't it? That there's some people who need to get married. They need to get married because they either need the companionship, they have desires they need to fulfill, they need to get married. And so I think this is the same thing here. There's younger widows who, when their spouse passes away, that it really, they need to get married. Why is that? Because, well, they start, they're distracted again, aren't they? They're not serving God. Instead, they're thinking about, man, I want to have more children. I want to be married. So I certainly see it the same way. They desire to marry. That's the issue. They want to get married. And it could be that they find themselves casting off their first faith. I saw a hand over here. Who was it? No takers?
Well, I didn't have my hand up, but I do.
Oh, okay.
How do you fit that verse 12 there? In other words, there's nothing wrong for the widow or the young adult that's seeking to get married. There's nothing wrong with that. And then you have that verse immediately after it says, having condemnation because they have cast off their first faith. Well, just because you're looking to get married doesn't mean you've cast off your first faith. So maybe what you said is that there's a possibility of that happening? Or
I think some of them already had. Look at verse 15. He says plainly that some of them have already turned to Satan, and that's what he doesn't want them to do.
Well, I think the key is in 13. It says they learn to do that.
Yeah.
Now, they don't have to do it, but it's very easy for them to learn and lean into that kind of life, away from the Lord. Condemnation.
Wasn't verse 11 saying that the church shouldn't enable it? That's what was happening, is that the church was supporting the widows,
right,
where they didn't need to provide for themselves. They were provided for, and then they learned to be busybodies because they had nothing to do with their
family. That's a good point, Jennifer. The whole context of this verse is about, or this chapter is about, which widows the church is responsible to take care of, and which widows need to do other things, right, that the church shouldn't take care of. And actually, when you get down to verse 14, remember, this is the same guy writing to Timothy that wrote to the Corinthians and said it's better that some people not marry. In verse 14, he says, I desire that younger widows marry, bear children, manage the house, give no opportunity for the adversary to speak reproach. So Paul here is basically commanding them, if you're a young widow, then you do need to get married. Dad?
There is an exception in the scriptures, and that's found in Luke, the second chapter, and it's Anna. And it notes there that this is in the temple, and there was one Anna, a prostitute, the daughter of of the tribe of Asher, and she was of great age and had lived with her husband 7 years from her virginity, indicating she had lost her husband at a very young age, but
Yeah. It may be that after being married, you now know what marriage is, and Anna in this situation knew that she didn't need to be married. That it wasn't for her. I don't know how to describe that, but that she was good with moving on. And what did she do? She served God. All right, I do have some other verses. The majority of what we read of in as far as married and widow or unmarried and widows is found in 1 Corinthians 7 and 1 Timothy chapter 5. But I think there's some other passages that I find very interesting. Let's look at Matthew chapter 19. I'm a little worried we might get off on a tangent that I'm not prepared to talk about on this verse, so let's stick to the subject at hand. Matthew chapter 19, someone read verses 10 through 12.
The disciples said to him, "If the relationship of the man with his wife is like this, it is better not to marry." But he said to them, "Not all men can accept this statement, but only those to whom it has been given. For there are eunuchs who were born that way from their mother's womb, there are eunuchs who were made eunuchs by men, and there are also eunuchs who were made themselves eunuchs for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. He who is able to accept this, let him accept it."
All right, so the context here is there were some questions about divorce, and in response to Jesus' answer to that question, the apostle said, "Wow, well, it sounds like it's better not to marry." And then Jesus says to them, "Well, there's some people who are going to be able to handle that. There's some people who are going to be able to remain unmarried. But that's not always the case." And then, verse 12, it says here, "For there are eunuchs who have been born thus from their mother's wombs." And while I think we could look at this and understand it to be literal eunuchs, I also think we could look at this and look at those people who have chosen not to marry. Those people who have chosen not to marry and therefore not to have children. And then it's this latter group that I want to focus on. And there are eunuchs who have made themselves eunuchs. This is why I don't think that this is a literal someone has physically made themselves a eunuch. And they have done so for the kingdom of heaven's sake. I think when we see this passage, we may be able to understand that there are people who choose not to marry. Why? For the kingdom of heaven's sake. So that they can serve the Lord. And certainly that's what Paul chose to do. Paul chose not to be married. Maybe he didn't have an opportunity. We don't know. But what did he do with his time after that? He served the Lord. So we see several examples of this happening. Yeah, Dad. Yeah, there's been a lot of conversation about this verse. I don't know that we're supposed to take it that way. I think we're supposed to understand it from the idea of you choosing to remain unmarried. When I look at it that way, it makes more sense to us. Certainly in a very physical sense he would have. Yeah, that they were those who by men's hands were made eunuchs. Certainly. Okay, let's look at something else here. Psalm 68 and 6. Here's an interesting thing about people who are unmarried. Well, you think, well, we talked about who a family is, and a person who's unmarried isn't necessarily a family in and of themselves, yet God puts them in a family. And I think this is interesting. Psalm 68 and 6, God sets the solitary in families. He brings out those who are bound into prosperity, but the rebellious dwell in a dry land. If no one else in your family serves God and you are unmarried, you still have a family. God puts the solitary in families. I know when Clayton prays, he often prays for our church family. And in a spiritual sense, and I think in a physical sense, we are a church, we are a family. And so God puts the single, the solitary, in families. Let's look at Isaiah 56. This is the last verse I have on this particular passage, and we'll bring out a couple of points on it. In Isaiah 56, verses 3 through 5, this is what Isaiah says. Do not let the son of the foreigner who has joined himself to the Lord speak, saying, "The Lord has utterly separated me from his people." Nor let the eunuch say, "Here I am, a dry tree." For thus says the Lord, to the eunuchs who keep my Sabbaths and choose what pleases me and hold fast my covenant, even to them I will give in my house and within my walls a place and a name better than that of sons and daughters. I will give them an everlasting name that shall not be cut off. So here we have this issue of eunuchs, this idea of a man who, I don't know if this is an individual who is married or not married. We could just take this to mean this is a person who's unable to have children. I think that's the context here. The context is a person who's not able to have children, and then they kind of complain about it. Oh, look at me, a dry tree. Well, I don't have any children. And now we could take this another step, and we might be making some supposition here to apply this to the unmarried, although certainly an unmarried person should not have children unless they unless they're a widow or a widower. But sort of starts by saying, don't complain about that, okay? And why not? Why don't complain about it? Well, don't complain about it because you will receive an inheritance. You'll have an everlasting name that shall not be cut off. And you think about that. Well, a person who's a eunuch, or a person who is unable to have children, a person who's unmarried, their heritage, their name dies with them. And there is no more beyond that. And God says here, don't make a big deal about that. We could read later on about endless genealogies. The genealogies aren't important. Don't make a big deal about it. Why? Because you're going to have an everlasting name that shall not be cut off. Now, we could apply this passage to the unmarrieds and say that, you know, you're not going to have a heritage from the Lord. You're not going to have children. But that's not a reason to complain. All right, this was all I had about the obligations and commands to the unmarried. There really isn't a whole lot there. Other than to serve the Lord without distraction. Any other comments on this?
In Daniel, I can't find it right now, there are two different occasions he's referred to as greatly loved by the Lord. Why? In his capacity, he was serving the Lord, and the Lord admired him, loved him.
Yeah, you know, we could, I didn't do this, we could look at a lot of the individuals in the Bible who were not married and all of the things that they did. Paul, Barnabas, we know for certain that they were unmarried. Daniel, we assume Daniel's unmarried. I think he's unmarried. We know that Jeremiah was unmarried. So there's lots of people we could look at it that were unmarried that did great things for God. We could probably also look at the people who were married who did great things too. So it's not an excuse not to do work for God, but it seems as though there's different expectations. Yeah?
I don't know if you're getting close to the end of time.
Yeah?
I'm going to bring up something. Maybe I should.
Oh, no. That's the end of my notes, Dwayne. I'm not prepared.
You know, we were studying with John Morris in the two-week meeting in Timothy, the letters to Timothy. And I think this is where we were talking about that the women shall be saved in childbearing, that issue. You know, so the issue was, well, what about women that are not married? There was a lot of discussion on that. But I believe that women are not married can still be mothers in the church. They can still be mothers, and what I mean is in the church family, they can serve as in the role of mothers or leaders or teaching the young children. And so in that way, they will be saved. But that doesn't mean they're not going to be saved at all. Yeah. Nobody believes that.
In, in a real sense, all of us are mothers in the church, right? Because, literally, it says that Jerusalem, which is above, is it Galatians, is the speaking of the church, says it's the is the mother of us all. The idea is there that as members of the church, we are mothers to the individuals who the people who we bring into the church. So, but to your point, you're right that you won't have the same kind of influence over children, but you will have influence.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot we could talk about that compares and contrasts the roles of married and unmarried. You know, Paul makes it clear in 1 Corinthians 7 that in some situations it's better for people to not be married. That in that, for him, it was best for him. You know, think about there in 1 Corinthians 7, what was happening is there was some persecution happening to the Corinthians, and Paul encourages them, if you're unmarried, don't seek a wife, don't seek a husband. If you're married, don't seek to be unmarried, because there was some present trouble happening. But you think about the freedom that Paul had because he was not married, and freedom to work for Christ. You know, he was able to travel and preach. He was able to do the work of an evangelist and be free from the obligations of a family. Now we know that people who are married can also be evangelists. We know that Philip was an evangelist, and Philip had seven daughters. So we know that it doesn't preclude you from being an evangelist. But yet, then we look at other roles in the church, and there's an obligation to be married, right? The roles of deacon and elder, those are roles that you must be married in order to have those positions. So there's certainly goods and bads to both. You know, what situation you find yourself in, make sure that you're serving God through that situation.
I think you also need to keep in mind at the time what was going on when Paul wrote all this. There was great persecution of the church, and the life expectancy of a lot of people was really short.
Yeah.
And they had a lot more urgency to serve God than most people in the church do today, I think. And so, why burden yourself with starting a family when you're trying to survive? We don't have that problem right now. This country, it's happening, but not to us right now.
Yeah, when you look at 1 Corinthians 7 and read the whole chapter in context, I think you get the picture that there was something about persecution that, and Paul was saying, if you're not married, now's not the time to be seeking a wife, because the last thing you need to be doing is trying to figure out your relationship and then also be persecuted. It would be very harsh. Any other comments? All right, we'll take a short break. Next week we're going to start in on fathers. So next week is fathers.